is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
Next on News for the Soul, Transformational Learning with Diane Hill. Diane is a member of the Bear Clan of the Mohawk Nation, situated at the Six Nations of the Grand River Territory in Ontario. Diane works as an integrative programs consultant and administrates the Real School Leadership Program and runs a private healing lodge and learning center focusing on fostering emergence. Her teachings integrate an indigenous worldview and with discoveries drawn from the quantum sciences, bridging the Western allopathic scientific perspective and the ancient indigenous multidimensional approach to wholeness. Please welcome back Diane Hill to News for the Soul.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I'm really happy to announce that I've asked Brenda Tyne to come back and to be my guest again on today's show as a follow-up conversation to where we left off on this notion of cultural exchanges and learning from each other, what we can learn from each other and from each other's cultures. So I asked Brenda to come back and be on the show with me again, and we'll have that conversation today. And Brenda is a psychic medium. She's been doing that work for about 30 years or more. And she's also a coach for businesses and entrepreneurs. And so she runs her own business in addition to what she does in the realm. She uses her gifts to help her give that good advice to entrepreneurs and business people in the world. So Brenda, are you there? I hope you're there somewhere.
I am here, Diane. Hello.
That's great. I'm so glad. Nice to hear your voice. You always make me smile, and I get a little chuckle.
And likewise for you, my dear. Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. So, nice to be here again. Thank you so much for having me back.
You're very welcome. Brenda, I thought we would focus on the part that we didn't get to in last show that we did a couple weeks back. And we talked then a lot about your connection to your native teacher, David Singing Bear. And now, and alluded to a few times about what you and I and our connection that hasn't been for that long, but seems like forever on the soul-to-soul level. But I thought we would go there today and maybe share a little bit with the audience about what you've learned from me as the native teacher who kind of showed up after you lost David Singing Bear after he passed away. So I was wondering if you could go back and recount that, because that was quite the story. And I know you wanted to tell it last time about how we first met, but I think this is the time when you need to tell that story.
Well, we'll do that. That sounds great. So, you and I have known each other since 2017, where we had the wonderful divine opportunity to connect at a gathering in Toronto, actually. So both of us were, you know, a little bit out of our locational space, because I don't generally work out of Toronto. I'm just outside of Toronto. And you, of course, are also. And so for us to have met in this particular venue was, of course, divine. But so we met. I was there. I had a table there with a friend and a couple of friends, actually. We had tables side by side. And I was the second day I decided I would do some mini readings for people. So I was blessed to make your acquaintance that day through your good friend and now our good friend, Esten, who encouraged you to come and see me. And you weren't feeling very well that day.
Not at all.
Battling some sort of something, and you were really having a challenge, and you didn't feel like it. We agree with that. But anyway, we did end up meeting, and it was absolutely wonderful. And from that point on, the you two both, actually, and I met another as well that weekend, and I was blessed to meet all of you. But I have to say that, you know, you and I have done an awful lot of work together over the last couple of years, or at least 4 years anyway. And I was very, very grateful to meet both of you and to engage in your style of healing, your style of working. So we ended up really connecting after that event at a retreat up north on the Mississauga Nation Reserve up there in Blind River. And that actually that wasn't the first time that I really experienced a really deep healing through your facilitation, but I definitely made a very good connection that weekend for sure. And from that point on, you and I worked together pretty much consistently since then. To round it back to the work that you've taught me and how I've learned from you, I was very open to to whatever it was I was going to have an opportunity to learn through the Native traditions and the Native teachings. And that very first weekend we spent together at the retreat ended up being a very working end to it. If you recall, there was an episode that happened, and we had to take care of some business, and everybody was kind of called into action. And I laughed because you're so used to that kind of work and everything. Not that I, you know, didn't, I didn't, you know, I just didn't expect it. But anyway, there you were eating your bread pudding.
you can explain that. On this radio show, you can explain things like that. So don't be afraid to go in and describe what was going on in the room, the episode
awesome.
You're referring to. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm so glad. Oh, let's talk about it then. Woo-hoo, okay.
Yeah.
Let's fly. So actually what happened was we were at this healing retreat, of course, and as it was winding down, you know, sometimes things kind of come to a culmination, and it doesn't really matter what the event is. If there's meant to be a healing and it's got to happen then or through that particular experience, then it's going to happen regardless of the timing. And so very much, you know, towards the very end of that that retreat, as everybody was packing up to go home, I think it was close to lunchtime even, there came an opportunity for a spirit release experience, which we would now refer to as somewhat of an extraction. But somebody had an attachment or an energy or an entity, whatever you want to call it, that needed to be released, needed to be cleared, and needed to be let go, and really just was looking for that opportunity to take advantage of the amount of healers that were there. Now, I want to be clear. When I say the word healer in reference to people who are able to facilitate healing, that's not the people. I want to say that. We are the channels for the healing to happen. The opportunity comes from the person who's willing to be healed, being comfortable enough and feeling safe enough to actually open up and allow the healing to happen. So that's kind of what happened. The energies were so strong that no matter where we were in the retreat, that person was finally ready to let that go. And she absolutely was immediately surrounded by light. I mean, a whole whack of us. Some of the people were still outside and had no idea what was going on. But those of us who were present and accounted for and aware were certainly immediately in action, light.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember this young woman, and she was in her early 30s, and she was even surprised. She was overcome with this pain. I remember standing there in the kitchen. I was just, you know, looking for something to eat and looking for cereal and this kind of thing. And then all of a sudden she grabbed her side. I remember her grabbing her side and bending over and excruciating pain and just starting to scream, and like, ow, ow, and fell to the floor in this pain and started to cry. I remember that part. And then people came running and then helped her in her pain to get her over to the couch. And when she got over onto the couch, what I remember is that there were many people surrounding her. But I don't think you were one of them. I think there were other healers. The one lady whose retreat in culture camp we were attending, I remember her being there. I remember two others, a Reiki master lady and another lady who may have been part of your group. I kind of remember the blondish hair, the lady who traveled with you.
That's right.
I think she was a yoga teacher. She was there.
Yep, both of them.
Yeah, and I think there was one more person attending. So there was like four people who were wanting to assist this young woman who was in a lot of pain and was crying out and crying, and she kept saying, I need to release it. Is that what you remember? I need to get it out of me, or this has to come out of me. I forget what she was saying.
Yeah, all of those things. You know, I need to let it go. I need to get it out. And, you know, it was interesting because I think there was an attribution to an encounter she'd had previously with someone who was in the moment of a very low vibration, and they hugged her, and she recalled that immediately.
Yes.
Remember?
That's right. I do remember, because her first cousin passed away. Now, he died from an overdose, a drug overdose, and he died in a province away. And I remember that they had to wait well over a week, maybe 2 weeks, before the body was returned back to the community. And I remember her saying she went to pay her respects to her cousin, because his body was laid out in the community center on the reserve deck, because they don't have a funeral home, so they take people to the community center, and then the community is able to come and pay their respects and be part of any kind of ceremony for burial. And I remember her saying she went there to do that, and then she walked outside to have a cigarette, I think she said. And then while she was having a cigarette, this lady who was drunk came walking kind of up to her. And she said at that moment when this lady hugged her, she felt a transference of energy into her own body.
Yeah.
But she said what captivated her was the smell of alcohol, because she got captivated by the smell of alcohol, kind of forgot about the whatever transferred and attached, and went with the smell of alcohol because she herself had just recently given up partying. And that smell of alcohol took her back to her party memories, and she went there as opposed to focusing on what was going on in her body and what just attached.
Absolutely.
That's how I remember it.
It was exactly how she recounted it as well. And you know, and I know that smell is the fastest trigger to a memory, right? It's the fastest trigger to a memory. It'll take you anywhere and everywhere immediately, like in, you know, micro nanoseconds. And that's what happens. We end up in that space emotionally. We call that energy to us. And all of a sudden there's an opening for that attachment to take place, which is what occurred
with
her.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal. And I was actually away. I was over by the sliding glass doors. So I was more back towards the counter, and I was kind of holding space in the circle there at the door, watching this happen. Now, I was also a witness, of course, to some wonderful forces that came in as well to assist from beyond the veil, which we need to be acknowledging, because we are not the only ones in that experience either. And there was a lot of energies there that were in assistance to this, the whole thing, because nothing happens by accident, and all is, as I always say, in divine and perfect order. So whoever's meant to be there is going to be there. And I remember somebody had called out, you know, to call on so-and-so, an archangel or something to that effect, and then they were already there. Like, these, we have to keep that in mind, right, that, you know, when we're in these moments, we're being witnessed, right? Like, we're not here by ourselves, and it's not like we have to bang a gong before somebody's, you know, attention has got we got somebody else's attention and they show up to help us. That's not really how it works, as far as my experience has been. And so that was all a part of that. And we did incur, you know, we did certainly create a huge, powerful circle of light where that extraction was able to be carried out. And it was removed from her and actually released into, you know, somewhere else. I think it went into the toilet, to be honest. I don't know. There's bags, always a bag involved, Diane, and toilets. We don't know. I mean,
she did spit it up. She did spit it up and vomit it into a bag. I do remember that. But the only reason why I didn't go over to assist or lend a hand and all that whole process was I looked over and I already saw that there were four women assisting her. So what was I going to do extra? So I just decided to go ahead and have my breakfast while all of this was going on.
And that's what you remember.
That
just cracks me up every time, Diane. Here we are in the middle of what we would consider to be a good old-fashioned exorcism on a Sunday morning, and there's not any cereal paying attention from across the room. I was over there with you, though, my dear, and I love that because, you know, that's the point. You can't panic. You don't need 20 people on top of that thing. Like, your presence, where you were situated, you hold a lot of energy. Like, you really are quite a container for energy. I'm not even sure how much you are aware of it yourself in when you're doing it, but you really are this incredible, I don't even know what to call it, like a, just a container, like you're a cylinder of energy.
A channel. I like to think of it as a channel. I like to think of myself as a channel for that energy. I don't see it coming from me, but through me. And
exactly.
And that's, yeah, and that's how I like to look at myself as.
I wanted to call you like a Tesla coil. That's what I want to call you. I want to call you a
Tesla
coil. A Tesla coil. But you were, right? Like you hold the energy and yet you bring it through you as well. It's quite something. I mean, really, Diane. So, but that, and it's a privilege to witness it, especially for someone like me who can kind of see energy in a way that a lot of people don't, right? So
yes.
I can see that, you know, those pillars and things like that happening. But that was my very first weekend with you, and that was one of the first encounters with healing. And what I learned in that moment was that, you know, what I thought natives were doing for healing, really did sort of extend beyond what I experienced there. Extended beyond, well beyond what I thought was actually. I mean, some of us have preconceived notions when you're not in involved with it or exposed to it. And so I didn't know that there was more to it than just teepees and sweat lodges and things like that. I didn't realize you all were doing that kind of stuff. I mean, that's where I grew up, in that kind of stuff. So to me, it was like, wow, right on. They do that too. kind of like learning, you know, that you all celebrate a certain holiday that I celebrate, sort of thing. You know, it's like, wait, look what we can do. So there we had it, right? To know there was some common ground. And that's what I want to talk about, because that's what really brought us together to do the work we've done, and for me to learn from you in the way. And that's what David really wanted me to do, was to learn this stuff, because, to blend both worlds, because the healing does need to take place. And that healing is not just what we can do together helping other people. It's what we do together that actually heals the gaps, the wounds, the scars, even, whatever that may be, between cultures, not just in people, but between cultures and in ancestries and things like that. So that's very important for us to acknowledge, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. And I think the sense of our humanity is sort of the key or the common ground there, because like you said, people can get caught up in the imagery of Native healing practices and the mysticism around the sweat lodge and just how the fasting rites go or the fasting camps are held. And so people want to do that, forgetting that the human element of those ceremonial experiences is where we have the common ground. Yeah. So all those experiences are for release of energies through the body, whether they're emotional or whether they're mental, negative mental thought process is still energy. And that release of that energy and facing your own demons, facing your own fears, facing your own and memories, I guess is the best way to say it, and knowing that they're just memories and being able to go back and to encounter those again for the purpose of unburdening yourself and then letting creation take it from you and recycle. Everything gets recycled back. So for me, it's just that simple, but I never realized that people coming from outside of my culture, you know, looked at us as kind of, I don't know what you would say, looked at us as kind of mystical people with, you know, in our cultural practices, because I guess they think something more is happening or something special maybe is happening. I'm not quite sure what the preconceived notion is there. Maybe you can shed a little more light on that.
Yeah, you know what, I think it is that, because we have this sort of, because first of all, traditions like that, healing stuff and personal private cultural traditions are generally kept secret, or they're kept inclusive to the culture, to those of it, right? I mean, so you don't often find a lot of white folks invited to the teepee, on a regular day kind of idea. There's only certain ceremonies. Like I know that there's certain parts to powwows and stuff that are just for the native folk, and that's cool because it's your deal. But at the same time, like we don't always know where to place, so we kind of kept ourselves back from all of that, and so we didn't really want to pry as well. Or at least I'm speaking for myself and for those I've spoken to of my Caucasian descent there that feel this way. And the idea is that, you know, we haven't had the exposure to it, so we do find it very mystical. We do find it, it's like the shaman, you know, the magic, the you know, the energy work that's going on, and maybe the miracles that are taking place. Well, we don't know that stuff. And if you're raised with any kind of Christian background, you're taught that that stuff's bad, right? So that's why, in a sense, you know, I think that some of the cultures have had and some of the races have had the you know, the trouble they've had is because they've been demonized. They've been, you know, made to be heathens and whatever else, you know, and that's not good. So don't even go there because it's not good, right? So all of that comes together, and we kind of hold back a little bit, and we're nervous about it and whatnot. And until you're really offered an opportunity to explore it, you don't know. So it's kind of like, you know, for lack of a better example, you know, maybe, you know, learning about the Jewish religion because you happen to have a Jewish friend now who wants to take you to synagogue. You know, it's the same kind of idea, but you don't get to go to synagogue if you're not Jewish, I don't think, right? Like, they don't just let anybody in. If you don't have a little hat, I don't think you get to go in the door, but, you know, or something like that. There's just something about that. It's not that they're not welcoming. It's just that they don't feel that there's a place for you there in that way. And I don't mean to sound like that, but that's kind of what I think most of us white folk kind of do. We keep ourselves back because we don't want to tread on anybody's toes either. So when I started to really learn a little bit about this stuff, I started to realize that there are a lot of commonalities. There's a lot of common ground between us. That, you know, that you pray. You know, I didn't realize that natives prayed in the way that, you know, you do, and the way I see it now. And those kinds of things are very inviting. Well, I do that too, you know, or I listen for Creator to answer me too, only I don't really listen the same way you do, or I appreciate the trees and the grass and things like that. And so there's these things that kind of bring it together, you know, and that's what I think is what helps people like me, the non-natives, to actually explore and find ourselves being allowed, like invited to see it. Because I can tell you, I know that for a very long time, it was, you know, frowned upon for Native teachings to be taught to non-Natives. And I know that I've heard of examples because I've known people who've known people who have done, you know, that very thing, taught outside the tribe, we'll say, and were ridiculed terribly for it because they are precious. They're sacred. And that's the thing. We want to keep those sacred. And I think that the fear of distortion comes in very real there. So I don't know if that makes sense in the totality of the question, but I think that the mysticism of the shaman kind of experience is what, you know, why we didn't really know a lot about it. But for us to explore, definitely open to it, like most of us are.
Yeah, and for my side of it, and from the Native people side of things, we've had like a history of what we call cultural appropriation. So people would come and study us and study our ways, whether they're anthropologists or ethnohistorians, and then they would write all this stuff down, and then they'd get their degree in anthropology or their degree in ethnohistory or whatever it was that they were pursuing. Psychology, there's a lot of concepts and ideas that, say, Abraham Maslow took from Blackfoot culture and Blackfoot people's native culture, and Eric Erickson was another psychologist, and they took these things and they created theories and practices and then put their own name to it. They didn't really give credit to the native informants or the sources of native culture that gave them those ideas from which they drew for their own and for their own knowledge and their own writings and their own careers. So it became from that kind of treatment or historical treatment, what native people started to do is they started to say, well, you can't come. We're going to just close this off and keep it to ourselves now. Because number one is you don't acknowledge, you know, us when you do take something from us. And then you take it and then you transform it into something almost unrecognizable from what we, our intent and for our purpose for using that particular rite or ritual, you've made it into something else. And I get that other cultures would do that because they have a different belief system, a different perception and a set of assumptions about what reality is and how it works, that they would put a different spin on, say, a ritual, and they would make it to appear like it was something that it isn't. And so there was a lot of that kind of practice going on historically that Native people just got tired of. They just said, no, you know what, we're going to close our doors. Nobody's going to come in and research. We're not going to share this because you guys just twist it and change it. And then if you do take it and we share with it, you don't even tell where it comes from, right? You make it yours. You appropriate it. You make it yours and it's no longer ours. So I think that's where that a lot of what you're talking about comes from, why we shut the doors. But at the same time, this is something that maybe people don't realize, is that even amongst Native tribes ourselves, I was, through my work in education, I had the opportunity to go up north to Nunavut. And so when I was working in Iqaluit, in the territory of Nunavut, one of my friends there who spoke was completely fluent in Inuktitut, completely raised. She was the one of the last generation raised in an igloo. So she remembers that in her early childhood, being raised there, and then changing, of course, as she got older, as the ways sort of lapsed and no one raised their children that way, as housing and these kinds of programs came into play. But in terms of certain of their culture and their practices, they had one practice that's reserved for young men. And the young man was to be celebrated and to share his first kill. And so the first kill was of a seal pup. And so when he was taken out to hunt by his father and his uncles, they would go out and take him on the seal hunt. And if he was fortunate enough to make his first kill of the seal pup, he was to bring that pup home, and he was then to offer that to his family members, his immediate and then extended family members. And in that offering, that was a huge celebration. It was like a rite of passage for this young man to be able to be celebrated by his family and his extended family, and then those community members who knew about it and were available to come. But I was an outsider. I remember my friend telling me, she said, hey, you know, so-and-so got his first kill on today. He got a seal pump, and they're having a feast on this with the seal pup. And I said, oh, okay. And I said, well, I don't know whether I can be invited. I would like to go. And she goes, well, I have to ask the family. She said, because normally we don't open that rite of passage. We don't like show people what we do or how we prepare it for the meat. And we don't usually share it with outsiders, but I'll have to ask because you might be different, she said, eh? Mm-hmm. So I'm not, like, I'm First Nations, but I'm not Innu. You see, so I don't have that cultural background behind me, nor do I have the language, nor do I know what they do. But I am of an indigenous, you know, First Nations, like Native people, right? So she went to her family and she asked for her family if it was okay to bring me. And, you know, and they did. And I remember going there and being so, like frightened myself and a little bit nervous because I didn't know what to expect. But I remember going in the house and the seal pup carcass was laying on the kitchen floor. And they had these bags that the carcass was laying on, and it would be there that they would then teach him how to dissect the animal and which parts of the animal that he would then keep and what then the people would use as food, as sustenance and nourishment. And because this is a fresh kill, and that's the best kill you can have because it is fresh meat, then you're going to dissect it soon as possible that evening, right? And the kill was earlier in the afternoon, so they were getting ready for that evening. And I remember them saying that I couldn't participate. I could watch, but I couldn't participate and eat the meat from that first kill because that first kill, the meat of the seal, was too rich for my constitution. They said, if you eat that raw meat like that, you'll probably get sick. So what we'd like to do for you, because you're not used to it, it's not what you know your people live off of, let's cook yours. We'll boil yours. And we'll cut some ribs off, and we'll boil some ribs, and you'll be able to eat the cooked meat, but not the raw meat. But if you do want to have a small taste, we'll let you have a small taste. But they ate it traditionally, and so they had a knife, and it's called the ulu, and they eat. Everybody has their own knife, and they're able to cut off, they clean the animal, the carcass, and they're able to extract the ribs and certain parts, and they remove the skin, right? And then they have the parts that they don't use, the entrails and the insides, but they keep the brain. And what was really interesting about the brain was that they made a pate out of it. And they took fresh brain, so it's seal brain, and then they chop it up, and then they put in the sweetener for it, or berries. And I don't think people knew. I didn't know. I was learning from them that you would take these frozen berries and blueberries. You would put them into the seal brain, and then you'd chop it up like a pate, and then you could put that onto something like a cracker, if you will. Or you could just have it on your knife, on the end of your knife, and you could take it directly that way. And that was considered a very delicacy for the people. But if you were watching them eat and watching how they cut off pieces of the meat and then they eat the meat raw, right, because that's the first thing that they were able to do in the frozen north, right? You got to remember, these are people who are living in really sub-zero temperatures, very cold, and so they would eat the meat. There's no place they cook it, so they just eat it from the seal, and you can imagine that the blood would run down the mouth, and so that's when my friend said to me, she said, "You see how they're biting into the raw meat? The blood's coming down," and she said, "We can't let outsiders see this, because then they would start to judge us and to talk about us as being like equivalent to vampires, because they're seeing the blood running down the chin, right, of the people, and they wouldn't understand that meat is actually why we survive the cold temperatures in the north." And I said, "How is that?" And she said, "It's because that raw meat, when you eat it," she said, "it'll send a heat. It generates a heat through the body that enables us to withstand sub-zero temperatures." And she said, "And the other thing you need to know about us is we don't sweat." So "We don't have the same, we have sweat glands, but they don't work the same for us in the far north the way it would work for you in the south, eh?" And she said, "There's lots of times," she says, "I've traveled to Ottawa and I've suffered because I can't sweat in the way that other people would sweat in your humidity and the temperatures you have in the south." So she said, "So everything up here is for a reason. But if you don't know that and you just come in and you're seeing us through a different lens, a different worldview, you can very easily judge us for pagan or savage practices, because they don't understand the efficacy behind why you would eat raw seal meat, and she said, "But that's what enables us to live here in the area that we call home, eh? And for you, it appears barren, and it's very cold and frigid and harsh. It seems harsh to you, but yet it's our home, eh? And we know how to interact with those elements and the beings here, right, the animals here, in the same way that you would know how to interact with the elements and the animals where you live in your area." And I appreciated that, Brenda. I appreciated that so much. So that was another culture teaching, another Native culture teaching another Native culture. So I can imagine, right, what that would be like if you tried to have that with a non-Native culture coming into, because I had a little bit of understanding, you know, from the deer hunt and the moose hunt from around here, but I didn't have the seal hunt. And so that was a different experience, yet it was, I had a little bit of background with me from my own culture that enabled me to be really open and accepting of what they were doing without judgment, eh? So and I think that's the key. I think so too.
Yeah.
So that I think from Yeah, that openness. Yeah, and so I didn't take pictures, and I didn't pull out the camera and immediately start snapping. You know, I said to them, I'd like to take a picture, but for my personal use, right, of the seal carcass, of the seal pup itself, and but other than that, you know, and they said, yeah, you can do that, but I don't need to take pictures of the people eating. You see, yeah. Like that. I don't. That's kind of sensationalizing things.
And that's so, it. Like you don't work for National Geographic, you know. Like there's no need to take that kind of picture.
Yeah.
Even
and
them,
so I,
right? They didn't really portray things properly.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't. I just sat with them and I had the whole experience. And I didn't. In the end, I never even took the picture of the seal carcass, but I just sort of immersed myself in the experience and gave thanks with a lot of gratitude for having learned something and experienced something that was just right out of my own cultural understanding, the realm of my own cultural understanding. And I think that's what you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, absolutely what I was talking. And that's it. It's when you can appreciate what you're seeing without that judgment, then, you know, you realize the reverence you hold and the respect and the even awe, right, for how they are. Because, you know, a lot of us, I mean, thank you so much for sharing that story with me, because it brought me, you know, a different perspective of them as well. And one of the things that I think a lot of people, we'll say non-natives anyway, we're so conditioned, right, to not be up of the land. Like, so, like, for a lot of us, hunting and things like that, there's a lot of people, like, you know, non-natives who are very against hunting and things like that, and I had a lot of mixed views about that when I was younger, because of course, you know, when you're younger you don't want to see anything get killed. But at the same time, you know, I also realized that, you know, these were feeding people. These animals were giving themselves up to be feeding for, you know, all kinds of people, not just one or two families. In some cases it's like extensions of families. And so, you know, there's always been an element of that connection to the land that helps you be sustained, right? Because that in those First Nations cultures, you're much closer to that. We are so far removed. The white folk are so far removed from that. We are grocery getters. You know what I mean? Like, most of us don't do that. Like, a lot of, unless you lived in the country for a really long time, if you're an urban anything, you don't really, you're so acclimatized to the city life, right? So I think that's beautiful, excuse me, about the seal pup, because a lot of people, you know, not just non-natives, but like a lot of people would have a problem perhaps with the fact that it was a seal pup. I mean, you know.
Yeah, they did.
Right? Yeah,
they do. They said they do. They do run into that, even in Nunavut.
And yet, when you think about it, you know, people don't have a problem cooking up some lamb chops. Right, it's no different. It's just the location, the geographic location. What I mean, and they sacrifice lambs lots of times over the, you know, course of whatever to appease other things as well. So, I mean, everything has a deeper meaning, of course, to it. But that right away, that symbolizes, you know, something much more powerful and sacred to them than just he killed a baby seal kind of thing, right? Like, first of all, you're not always catching them because they're kind of quick. And I've always believed that if you're lucky enough to go home from a hunt with something that you've been able to, you know, to kill, then that being, that animal allowed it to happen, right? Like, there's no way you're catching or killing anything that doesn't want it killed or caught. So,
and that's right. So they have their invocations, if you will, right? They have their prayers and they have their offerings that they put out, and then they go out humbly looking for food. They're looking for food. They're looking for that animal which is going to offer itself to feed the people in exchange for the offerings. So that's that teaching of reciprocity. So that's what I learned there. And not to compare, it's not an equivalency comparison, but if you look at veal, my understanding that the meat veal is a young cow, it's a calf, right? Baby cow. But and the seal pup is the equivalent to like a veal. And so it's a delicate meat. It's a very delicate meat, and it's full of, it's jam-packed with nutrients and the elements and minerals that animal has consumed. Like, they're directly consuming that, which is what's creating that exchange of heat, and the way that their body metabolizes that particular food, eh? And they've come to know that really, really well over the time of their lifetime, right? Living in that culture, living off the land.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, that's fascinating. They know that, right? And you're talking about people who live in snow houses, Diane, and they know the chemistry of meat. Like, come on! Like, that's cool! Like, really? That, and to me, the life force, the blood that they're ingesting, you know, that's not just the alchemical connection as well, but there's a spiritual connotation or a spiritual energy that's in that too, right, that's infused in that energy, or that blood rather, that is also offering life force, right, a rejuvenated and young and vital life force.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, like, when we're talking about, you know, what you've learned from me, what I've learned from you, I think one of the really cool things that you helped me with over the time that it's not that long, eh, when you look at the years, but one of the things that I fought with a lot was I fought with my mind, what I call my ego mind. And so one of the main things that I fought with was the belief that there wasn't anybody out there, anything out there that was going to help me, right? That I had to bend over backwards and do the best that I can to help myself. And as for many years, as I've grown up in a Native culture, knowing that there were spirit helpers or spirit guides, there was always this little voice in my head that said, are you sure? Are you really sure? Like this doubt, eh? I was calling it the doubt. And I remember when, you know, that's what I really admired about you and what you taught me, is because you absolutely seen these energies and there was no doubt. It was like, yeah, can't you see it? I see it. Everybody, you know, like it. And the reality was, no, I couldn't, right? That wasn't how I connected to that energy in the world. I could feel things, but I couldn't see them. And you know what they say in Western culture, eh? You got to see it to believe it. And I think because I was assimilated and enculturated into Western mainstream culture, as a lot of Native people are, where, you know, the whole push to assimilate us and enculturate us into their way of seeing the world, into their worldview, it created a lot of doubt inside of us, so that we even doubted our own ways sometimes, and we certainly doubted that whether there was anybody or anything there. But when I met you, Brenda, and I don't think it's so much that it was your culture, I think it was you, the person, who outside of your own culture, because I don't think if you actually subscribe to your own culture, they probably wouldn't believe you either. but you held true to yourself. You stayed true to yourself and to your gifts and to what you saw and to what your experiences were. And it never occurred to you that these things could not be real. And these things meaning spirits and energies and lights and like different things that, you know, even to the extent of what people call UFOs, eh? That all those things are possible and all those things are real. And that's what you helped me come to terms with, was you helped me to realize, well, there are these things. They are real and everybody can see them, but you have to be open to the experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, just like ghosts.
Yeah.
And which is a different realm altogether, but just like ghosts, right? If you don't believe it, first thing is you're not going to be open enough to see it. And it's not going to be just because you're open to see it or believe it you do see it, but you're more likely to line up with that opportunity for that experience because you're open to it. And, you know, I will say, and I thank you for that, Diane, because that's so fun. We have learned a lot about communication, haven't we, over the last few years?
Yes,
and what we
yes.
can what we can communicate with and how well we can be communicators and mediums, dare I say the word, but connectors or channels, whatever. But I do want to also acknowledge, as I know our time's getting out there, I want to say Diane Hill has taught me so some wonderful lessons over the years, but the one that is probably the biggest is something that I used to struggle with, and she's helped me come to terms with that, Diane. You've definitely helped me come to terms with that, and that is that whole feeling it to heal it stuff. And I do want to acknowledge that before we run out of time, because that's probably the most important part to our work, from my angle anyway. Your part, of course, is that communication, but you've really helped me recognize how important it is to get into the deepest parts of us, to drop into the body, into the nervous systems and things like that, to actually release the energy that's caught there as trauma. And that's really powerful work that you do. And I really want to acknowledge and let people know how much I appreciate you and the work that you do, because you've helped an enormous amount of people do that very thing, get into their body, get into their nervous systems, and release what has been trapped there as triggers of trauma, rather, and let it go and help release that from the body so that they can be free, you know, and no longer weighed down or burdened by those whatever those demons would be, right? That's exactly what it is. It's all demons or some sort of a negative or lower vibrational energy. Doesn't matter what you call it either, really. It doesn't matter what you call it.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It's heavy energy. And yeah, we just look at it as heavy energies and they're being released. But that's what you're talking about, is the valuing the human experience. I think so many people want to escape the human experience, escape their bodies, and not realizing that that's the body is what allows you to smell the roses. The body is what allows you to, you know, to feel the sunlight onto your, you know, your face, or, you know, like, so to taste the ice cream, like to smell and to hear the birds, like you need a body for that.
And
people forget to value that body, because I think they think the spiritual experience is supposed to be outside the body, when really the spiritual experience for us has always been you bring your soul in deeper into the physical bodies, and you come in and you go down. You go down and you use your breath to help you get there. And so that experience, the more you do that, then the more that you heal, the more that you release, the more that gets transformed, more heavy energy gets transformed into light. And for me, it's a really process of becoming more whole. And so that integration, right, of the soul with the physical body is what I believe our cultures are good at, what Native people are good at. We're good at saying, you know, this is where we need to be grounded. This is where we need to live. And you want to live in the body. The time will come when you'll be a spirit or soul, right? You'll leave this physical existence as you know it. And then you go on to the next one. But while you're here, you might want to enjoy the one you got, right?
Absolutely. You know, the vehicle we're running around in is how the soul animates, right? How the soul is able to, you know, be that animating force in our life to do exactly what you said, to engage in the senses, whether they're the, you know, the five basic senses of physicality or those extra senses that we have, we're all equipped with, you know, the clairs and all the beautiful intuitive, you know, responses we can and reactions we can have. That's very important for us to acknowledge that, because it's a cooperative effort, right? Like, it's truly not just one part of anything. It's not a spiritual experience. It's not just a mental, a physical, or an emotional experience. It's all of those experiences. It's the totality of it all that we are, you know, moving through each day with, right? Living this whole journey that is the soul's animation. So that's, you know, that's a really important point to bring out as well, that if you don't get into the body, clear it out. Like I keep telling people, we're just here as pegs in a light bright, you know, you got to clean your peg, because the way the light shines, if your peg's all dirty and icky, you can't see as clearly, and you don't shine as bright or as clear. And that's the most important part. Everybody's got shadow work to do. This whole last year and a half has been all about people working on their shadow work. The whole world, globally, collectively, humanity is working on shadow work. So,
clearing
out the demons. Yeah, all of this stuff, clearing out the demons and working on, because everybody's facing their own personal hell right now. Like, there's an intensity and extremity to the experiences everybody's having, whether it's coming up against the worst nightmare they could think of, or something other, you know, other fear-related thoughts or whatnot. So that is stuff that gets caught in our body. And just as you do the work with people, you help bring that out. So, you know, I didn't know that there was much left in me. I didn't really have anything to be taken out or off of me in that way. But I had to reconnect to time in my life that I had dislocated or disassociated from, that I had literally put a little bit like a broke the chain link on in terms of my own nervous system and things that needed to be cleared out. So you helped me do that, and I really wanted to appreciate or tell you how much I appreciated that, because I hadn't had that opportunity to really feel it and heal it like I did with A Weekend. But go visit Diane Hill. You've got anything you want to get out.
Trust me, from the physical body. From the physical body. You can't forget that you got a physical body. That's all I tell people, is you kind of need one of these in order to live here.
On there,
you need.
Yeah.
So Brenda, we're running out of time, and we're at that stage of the game where we can do shameless self-promotion. And I don't know whether I gave you an opportunity to put out your email or your website. So I was wondering if you wouldn't mind sharing your website URL and your email with folks. And I'd like to have you back in 2 weeks' time for another show. And I've been toying with this idea of opening up the phone line. So I'd like to discuss that with you and have you back for next show for, say, a part three. And we'll have to talk about how to structure that. But I'd like to do that. But for now, what's your website, and what's your website's URL and your email address?
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, and I'd love to come back for that. You can find me at brendasyn.com, and that's B-R-E-N-D-A-T as in Tom, H-Y-N, like Nancy, .com. And now that's a landing page. You can go follow that little link in there, and it'll take you into pages that describe a little bit about who I am and what I do. And you can email me at brendasyn@gmail.com. You can find me that way as well. And, you know, or, well, you can try me on social media, but I'm generally fairly unavailable lately because I keep getting into trouble posting stuff I'm not supposed to post. So, you know, that kind of thing. But I'm on Telegram and places like that. You can certainly find me on the free speech platform. And definitely out in my speech.
So, Brenda, how would you describe what service you offer? How would you describe it in your own words?
So at this point, I'm kind of more describing myself as a spiritual advisor and consultant, as a psychic medium, but also I would say more like an intuitive consultant as well for those mainstreamers who have a little trouble with the woo-woo of the psychic medium part. But I'm mostly, that's what I'm doing right now with people, is the truth-telling, helping them, you know, become aware of what's really going on right now, what we're dealing with, what we're able to do, where our power lies. So an empowerment coach as well in that kind of idea, an extraordinary engager. That's what I am. There you go. But yeah,
okay.
I'm basically doing all of that for people right now.
That's awesome. Okay, thank you so much, Brenda, for taking the time out of your busy day. I know you're a busy person, and being with me here on the show today. And let's do that part three. Let's get together after the show and have a little chat in days to come about how we might structure something. And I'd like to try that out, open the phone lines up and see. Yeah.
I'm all
but
for
we'll structure
that.
It.
Yeah, I've done them before. We can throw out a theme and see what, you know, if people have specific questions about specific things, whatever. We'll talk about it, though, Diane, and I'm certainly game for that.
Okay. Okay, that's awesome. Okay. Thank you so much, Brenda. I'm going to let you go. And thank you for being here today. It was awesome to talk to you once again.
Always a pleasure, Diane. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much, and God bless everybody. Have a good day. Oh, new moon solar eclipse tomorrow. Well, 2:43 this morning coming, like tomorrow morning. So hang on to your hats, folks, and stay grounded.
Okay. Good advice. Thanks, Brenda.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com.
Now let's get back to the show.